We have the zechus today of hearing a chabur from Rabbi Flug. On Monday, Bezer Hashem, I'm going to do the chabura, Bezer Hashem, everything going well, on Daf Kuf, the Biltos and Daf Kuf, the famous Tos of El Hanan, and Trey Masher, as it's called, on Monday, Bezer Hashem, because we have to keep pace, and soon everyone should get ready to move to Avodah Zarah, Bezer Hashem. So there definitely is a compromise in general. One of the tensions in our limud is that we have the zechus of learning B'tiyas B'iyun. We accomplish a lot, so we learn a lot. B'tiyas, let's say, at least 40 blat. It's an ambitious goal, but we try to be ma'ayin in some of the studios. So it's always a tension. We should be zochet to learn for months and months just the studios we've done. Tam Keter itself could take you months. And we'll revisit Tam Keter and Avodah Zarah again also, Bezer Hashem. But in terms of just keeping pace to get more breath, we're going to move as soon as you can. Everyone should at least be off the Daf Kuf, and to move, Bezer Hashem, to Avodah Zarah as soon as you can. There is an interesting old wives' tale. It might have its roots to an extent in somewhere in our Masorah with sources that I'm not familiar with, that when Adam Gadol passes away, it's raining. By Levi's Adam Gadol, it's raining. That's what they say. I never met Rebbetzin Shifra, or Sifra as they say in the Litvish Tendler, but her resume speaks for itself. Being the daughter of Moreinu Rabbeinu Posach Hadar of Moshe Feinstein is an unbelievable yichus. And of course, being married to one of our Zakan Rashi Yeshivas, Rav Moshe David Tendler, is a tremendous yichus. Having brothers, Rav David, Rav Ruvain, and sons who are Maritz Torah in our yeshiva, she must have been a very phenomenal person. Of course, there's always a tension between Alevaya, Mitzvah Alevaya, and being Tevetim Torah, even for those that knew or knew of Rebbetzin Tendler. And the Bnei Yeshiva, the Bnei Kol that are here, made the right decision not going to the Levaya, even if those had the Havamina, because this is the Bidis Lechus. The Bidis Lechus is, as Chazal tells, the Gemara says, Voshev Yeshiva Al Kivro, to learn Torah as Lechus for the Nifter. But it's important that we recognize, even those people, including myself, that never knew Rebbetzin Tendler, never met her. Many people in our Yeshiva don't even know Rav Moshe David Tendler. But our learning Torah today at Bizman Levaya, as it's taking place in Muncie, should be a zechus for a neshama. Shifra Bas Rav Moshe, Moshe Feinstein, Rav Moshe, should be a zechus. We shall be zochet to see the gula of Imheira. When President Joel became president, he coined many unique terms. One of President Joel's unique capabilities is that he has very good catchphrases for many things. And he often told people that our yeshiva is a yeshiva without walls. And really the whole idea of yeshiva, by definition, is yeshiva without walls. Yeshiva is a place, Yafutza Mainasacha Chutza, which has the Hashpah of Torah, but not only Torah within the Dalaramas of the Beis Medrash, which is Mashpiah. As the Rav pointed out, based on Eretz Yisrael, Lassel Lavo, Eretz Yisrael is going to have such Kedusha, the Kedusha of the whole world will stem from Eretz Yisrael. And that's what we believe as far as Torah Hashem as well. The Kedusha of anywhere, a person's whole life stems from the Beis Medrash. It's a very big zechus for us to have Rejash Shlut, who's one of the Talmidei HaKol, one of the Mitzuyanim, from our Kol, from the Kol Elyon, who is well known to people that were not in the Beis Medrash necessarily when he was there, by his fantastic lucid emails in Halacha L'maisa. It's a big zechus for us to have him, who's one of the pioneers in taking our yeshiva and bringing it to another place, to Boca Raton, a place which 20 years ago probably didn't have such a Jewish community. We made just a fair swap. We got Rabbi Brander, and they got Rabbi Flug. But it's a big zechus for Hashem to have Rabbi Flug here, Dimas HaChabura.
Thank you, Rabbi Maybrook. I think it's a big schus that so many people joined this chulin call that didn't even exist. How many years ago did you start? Four years ago, and you know, it's amazing to see how many people are part of the call. Can't hear. I'll talk louder. When I mentioned yesterday to one of the guys that I'm giving the chulin chabur, he's like, "Oh, you could be like one of those guys who just comes and gives on any topic." I'm like, "No. I worked it out. We, you know, it happens to be that this works out that on Daf Kuf there's a sugya that I had already given on. So thank God everything worked out. So the sugya is really just four words, but it's part of a much bigger discussion. We're basically going to talk about some of the issues that deal with Tolayim, and how they relate specifically to Yoredeya. I'm not going to focus on all the details and, you know, whether lettuce has bugs or this and that. Just, you know, just the basic guidelines in terms of people who are learning Tarovas and Perikid Hanasha, what's relevant to that. So, before we start talking about Beria, and if you did the sugya already, you know, Beria is an issue midrabanan. But in order to deal with the issue of bittul by talaim, first you have to get around potential shaila of a deraisa, whether there's actually bittul to talk about without coming onto Beria. So the Mishnah Chulin, and this, you don't need this Mishnah, there's plenty of Mishnayos which hint to this idea that Gid HaNosha Shanis Vashla Magidim Bizman Shem Akiro B'no Saint Tam. So Rashi says B'makiro, I'm reading the wrong and where is that? Mashlifo Lechutz. Rashi says that. Bizman Shem Makiro. So Rashi says Mashlicho Lechutz, meaning if there's Nikara Iser, if there's a Taroves and there's Nikara Iser, meaning that the Iser is Nikar B'socha Taroves, so that's clearly not a Taroves. Tosus on Tzadi Hey hints to the fact in Divar Masel Sveko, he says Rahad de Kaimelon on the starting on the second line, the Kaimelon mi deraisa chabetre botil hainu hecha shem ura veinu nikara iser aval hacha yadua iser beduchte. Whenever there is an iser that's nikar beduchte, meaning you could see the iser, so that's not even a tarovis. You have iser veheter, the iser's on top and the heter's on the bottom, so even though it may be in the same pot, that's not a tarovis. That's two things that are in the same pot and they're not mixed together, and if you could take one of them out, or you could see if there's some way to separate the two, so that's not called a tarovis, and that's nikar iser, and that's a shayla v'daraisa. If you were to eat that, well, we would call a mixture, it's not really a mixture, if you would eat that, I guess there's no better word for it, but if you would eat the whole thing, so you'd be chayiv for whatever's in the tarovis. So the shayla when it comes to toloim is the following. You have toloim in a mixture, right? Or what we would call there are toloim in, let's say, a given dish, right? The dish may or may not have bugs in it, okay? So do you say that that's a shayla of a daraisa or a shayla of a darabanan? Is that nikar iser or is it not nikar iser? So if you could see the bugs, and this happens once in a while, you know, you get ants in your noodles or something, so if the ants are crawling around and you eat them, that's clearly an iser daraisa. But what if there are bugs within the mixture and you can't necessarily spot them, but there's a way to remove them? So you can, let's say, soak them in soap water. So you soak them in soap, some bugs, I'm not saying that this always happens, but in a lot of situations, let's say lettuce, you take lettuce and you soak it in soap water, so all the bugs will die and they'll float to the top, or almost all of them. So are those bugs, if you were to eat that lettuce now, is that a shayla of a deraisa or a shayla of a drabana? Do we say that there's bittul on those bugs? Leaving aside the issue of beria, can we say that those bugs are bittul within the tarovis? So for those who are learning tarovis, there is a rama in Tzadiches, the Rama says if you have chalev that falls into a mixture, so what do? With the chalev, you pour in cold water, what's going to happen to the chalev? It'll rise to the top. Once it cools off, it'll either congeal or float, you know, however this works scientifically. You have a certain type of chalev where you pour the water in and the fat will float to the top, and you can skim the fat off the top. So whatever you can get out, the Rama says you have to get out. Why? Because that's considered nikar iser, right? That the fat within the mixture is sort of nikar, right? If you can get it out, it's considered nikar iser. Okay, so is that itself, this requirement to pour the water in, is that a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabanan? Meaning, are you really mechuyev to pour in the water to get out the fat? Or should you just say, I have a pot of soup, there's some chalev in it, the chalev should be batel b'shishim, right? And I could leave it the way it is, Minat Torah, and then the Rama recommends, you know, L'Ravcha D'Milsa, just for an added precaution, to pour in the water and get it out. So here you have a machlokas between the Plesi and the Prima Gadim. The Plesi thinks that the whole thing is just a chumrah, right? Really, Me'ikar Adin, the fat's mixed in there, it's batel b'shishim, you could leave it the way it is, and you don't have to do anything. You can enjoy your soup even though there's chaylev in there. And the whole requirement to do this is just a chumrah b'yalma to try to get out the fat that's treif. So therefore, the place he says that if pouring in cold water would now ruin your soup, so then you don't have to do it. It's only because it's sort of like if they got everyone got the mevatlan nisul chachila. Okay, tzadi tes. So that's the next simon, but. There's a concept of I'm sorry, Davar Sheishel Matirin. There's a concept of Davar Sheishel Matirin, which is a little bit later on. So Davar Sheishel Matirin says that if you could eat it beheter, why eat it beisser? So this is a similar idea. You have fat in there. You have the possibility of getting it out. So why should you have to eat it with the fat when you can just pour water in and get it out? But if it's going to cause some sort of hefzed, it's going to cause the soup to get ruined, you're not mechuyev to pour in the water to get out the fat, me'ikradin. That's the place. And the Prima Gadim thinks that this is considered nikra iser min ha-Torah. That if you could pour water in and get that fat out, even if it's going to ruin the soup, but you have to do it. You're mechuyev min ha-Torah to get that fat out because the fat is not really mixed in. Mixtures, according to the Prima Gadim, means that there's no way to get it out. If there's a way to get it out, so it's no longer a mixture, the chaylev, even though you can't see it before the fat rises to the top, you can't see it within the mixture, but it's there somewhere, and there's a way to get it out, so that's called nikra iser, that's an iser de'oraisa. It's an iser de'oraisa to eat that soup. So, Poskim apply this to the shayla of the bugs, right? So if you have, let's say, lettuce that may have toloim in there, let's say it's muhsuk b'toloim, so that might be a shayla of a d'oraisa to eat the lettuce because all you have to do is take the lettuce, soak it in water, and put some soap in, and the bugs will come to the top. So you have a way of getting out the bugs, so that's called nikra iser. So even if it's a tircha, according to the Prima Gadim, even if it's a tircha, and even if it's a hefsed merubah, you'd be mechuyev to do that. According to the Plesi, so if it's lettuce, so nothing's going to happen if you put some water and soap in. So that's what the Ramah is recommending you to do, to try to get out as many bugs as you can, leaving aside the other issues with bugs. But according to the Plesi, it's not as critical, let's say, in a case where it would ruin the entire vegetable by soaking it in water and soap, so then he wouldn't necessarily require to do it based on this Ramah. There may be other reasons why you have to do it, but based on the Ramah, it wouldn't be a chiyuv min haTorah to try to get the bugs out. Whereas according to Prima Gadim, they'd be a chiyuv d'oraisa to get those bugs out of the mixture. Okay? So now, let's say you've got past that point, right? So either you're dealing with now toloim that don't come out through just the regular process in the Ramah. You know, even the Ramah will agree, or even the Prima Gadim will agree, there's only so far you go in terms of saying that it's Nikar Iser, right? So you know, if you had to buy like some million-dollar chemical to separate the chaylev out of the mixture, I don't think he would go that far. I think Rabbi Kiviger discusses on the daf there that it has to be somewhat of, you know, what normal people do to sift out the Iser. That would be Nikar Iser. If you have to use some, you know, so if you have to go to the FBI to get out the Iser, so that doesn't mean it's Nikar Iser. So let's assume you got past this. That's where we get to the sugya that the call is generally up to Daf Kuf. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara is talking about the Gidah and Asher Shinis Bashel. So the Gemara says, why don't you say, and again, if you say Ein Begidah Beno Same Time, so V'Liftel Beruba, right? If you have a Gidah and Asher in the mix, it should be Batel Berov. Right? And Rashi again says ki ein makiro, if you don't know where it is in the mixture. If it's makiro, so then you have to be mashlich olachutz, you have to take it out. But if you can't find the gid hanasha in this big mixture, So then maybe it should be batal barov. To which the Gemara says, beria shiny. What is a beria? Beria is something that's, well, the simple definition is something that comes from some being, right? From an animal, from an insect, whatever it comes from. It comes from a being, so this is different. Now, it can't really mean that because everything, meaning anything that's non-kosher, not anything, but almost everything that's non-kosher comes from some animal or insect source. So the Rishonim give basic hagdaras. I think it's a little clear in the Ran. The Ran on the Flamet Vav says the following. The Rush also says it, but not all in one line, so it's easier to follow in the Ran. It's in the middle, on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. The first word on the line is Ein, although there are probably a few of those. There's a period right there, three words later. Ein kan iser. So he says, V'havei yodeyat lo mikri birya ela begimel tanoim. There are three conditions to be called a birya. Ha'echad sheyehei isura migufa. Right? It has to be isura migufa, meaning inherently usher. You don't call something a birya if it's not inherently usher. The Ran develops that in a minute. Hasheni shetehei b'riyas neshama. It has to be from a being. And the third, shetehei shlema. It has to be whole. So he says, isura migufa keitzad. Gid ha'nasher v'keil tzivoshu usher mitchilas b'riyaso. Right, it has to be usher from the time it's born. Meaning a gid hanasha is usher from the moment it comes out of the womb. The gid hanasha starts out as usher. It's always, that piece was always usher. Whether the animal's kosher or not kosher, that gid hanasha is always a problem. Aval tzipur tahora the kayotze v'ashehimu teres. Right, if you have a bird that started out as being kosher until somebody came along and killed it, so in the case of a bird, you have a bird. Somebody was nisnabel. Somebody shot it in the head. So now it didn't undergo shechit. That's a nevela. But the bird started out sort of. It was Avram and Achai, but it sort of started out as potentially kosher. So that's enough to not be called a birya. Whereas the Gid Anasha was always usher. Okay, and the second one is that it has to be from a Riyas Neshama. It has to be from a being. And the third is that it has to be whole. The Ran talks about what whole means. Where is it? Tnai Shlishi, if you skip down. Tnai Shlishi, Dahainu Shetehei Shlema Keit. Such Ilu Nisrasik Mimenu Aver Ein Toras Birya Aleha. Right, if one of the limbs is removed, so that's not considered a birya. So you see, I mean, when you're dealing with insects, it's a little bit hard, and then this relates to the microscope, whether you use microscopes, lacula. Right, so you will not see, if you, at least depending on the size of the insect, if a leg is removed, there's no way to know. You have to look in a microscope. Now, we don't look in microscopes in the first place to determine whether there are bugs there. So we'll have to look in the microscope to see if there are, if a leg is missing after process X, Y, and Z. So I'm not sure if you're allowed to, but when this whole shiloh with the bugs in the water came up, what was that? That was 3 or 4 years ago? So Ari Zatz and I, we boiled some of them just to see what would happen. And then we looked in the microscope to see, like, if there were any pieces missing. What we found was like the whole thing was like blown to smithereens. It was like in a million pieces. You couldn't see like any, you couldn't find them anymore. And then other people did it and that didn't happen. So I don't know how to resolve that. But I could just tell you what we did and what we saw. I don't know how to resolve the fact that other people boiled them and they remained intact. But so there are, I've seen that svara out there that, yeah, if you put bugs in the freezer, their eyes pop out, which, well, I don't know if that's true even, but an eye is an aver. There's no question that an eye is an aver. The question is, can you determine that visually? If you can't determine that visually, so I'm not sure if you could use that as a kula, you know, just to assume that the eye popped out, because some of the eye popped out. If you cook it already, it's not going to remain whole. At some point, it's not going to remain whole. It may remain whole for a minute or two, but you know, even the people who claim that they remain intact, that's only initially. But after like 10, 15 minutes, they're going to start breaking apart. Yeah. That would, yeah, it technically would be a problem. The question is that mevatlin iser l'chachila, to chop something up from a beria into not a beria? The Rashba and the Ran, I haven't seen this in a bit of time. There is a discussion about this. The Rashba and the Ran have machlokas about a mevatlin iser l'chachila. One of them says that it's only a problem if it's kavanasa levatel, and the other one says that it is a problem if it's kavanas levatel, but if you don't benefit from it, it's not a problem. So I believe somebody has a tshuva that you can put if your intention is not to eat the bugs, and you're gonna blend whatever you're blending anyway, so then it's mutter, then it's not a problem. So for example, raspberries, which, you know, I don't know the exact details. Raspberries have a certain level of infestation. But raspberry jelly has hashgacha on it because they're making the jelly anyway, so the raspberries are going through this machine that there's no way for a bug to actually make it whole through the other side. And they're not doing it for the purpose of chopping up the bugs. They're doing it for the purpose of making jelly. There's no way to... You can't just put raspberries in a jar and call it jelly, at least. And... and so since that's not their kavana, I believe that that there are mekilim for that. Same thing with like chickpeas in Eretz Yisrael are very infested, but some people are make falafel balls out of them. Same idea, because they're going to get crushed anyway, regardless of whether. Yeah.
I don't know how relevant this discussion for it is, but I once asked the chef this similar question, like about like whether to cook things in the water.
Does require some agitation, right? If you just let it sit in the water, it may not break up. Although I told you, I mean, I tried it and they broke, so I can't tell you what the other side, who says that they don't break, will agree that if you mix it up, they break apart. Okay, so Shulchan Aruch quotes all these conditions in terms of what's considered a beria, and so an insect would fall in that definition. Just agav, there is a machlokas in Makos about chita, right? That, oops.
Where's Makos?
There's a machlokas about malchus for eating a bug. So you have machlokas between Rav Shimon and the Chachamim. So Rav Shimon says any iser is b'kol shehu, and Chachamim say that in order to be chayev for any iser, it's a kezayis. So Amar lehem Rav Shimon yitim modim li ba'ochal namala kol shehu chayev. If you eat an insect that you're chayev, and you chayev min haTorah, you get malchus, even without eating kezayis. Amar lo b'nei shehu b'riyaso, right, that the reason why eating an insect is a problem, meaning it's chayev, is because it's a beria, and that relates to this din in the Gemara, meaning that a beria by itself, because a beria is considered something significant qualitatively, and in on the Doraisa level, you would get malchus for eating a beria, even if it's not a kezayis. So that's why there's a din drabanan similar to chaticha haruil iskabe, that that because a beria is chashuv, so it's not batal. That's the basis of the din drabanan. So Rav Shimon responds af chita achas kibriyasa. If you're going to tell me that an insect is chayev on a mashu because it's a beria, so to a chita should be chayev because it's a beria. So Rav Shimon clearly does not follow the opinion a beria needs to be from a live being, unless he considers a plant to be a little bit better. I don't know. But Rav Shimon doesn't have that requirement. What's interesting is that in Hilchos Brachos, you have a discussion of a beria in the Rav Shimon, in Rav Shimon's camp. Based on Yerushalmi, the Ramah quotes this in Siman Reish Yud and Orach Chaim, that if you eat a beria, so you may have to make a bracha achrona even if you don't eat a kezias. So that really, you know, where it comes up is like if you eat one grape. So assuming that your grape is less than a kezias, which again, depending on the grape. Now they have these grapes that are like, they look like they're from the Meraglim. But, and you probably couldn't eat it in one bite anyway. But so the Ramah says that if you eat the whole grape, so it's a suffix whether you have to make a bracha achrona or not. Based on this Yerushalmi, that eating a beria may be a shir chashuv in terms of bracha achrona. So that that Ramah, based on the Yerushalmi, doesn't really fit in with the regular rules of beria as we find in Shulchan Aruch, because in Shulchan Aruch it has to be from a live being. So a chita wouldn't be considered a beria in terms of Hilchos Tarovos. Okay, now that we've sort of established that there is this concept of beria, so if an insect were to fall into a mixture, so then even if you got past the shaila of daraisa, meaning there's no way to get the insect out, so you can't pour water on it and let it float to the top for some reason. You can't do anything. The insect is in there, or you have something that is muchsak betolaim, you have a certain vegetable that has many insects, so you don't even have to look, you know that there are insects in there. So let's assume you get past the shaila of the daraisa. So what about the shaila of the drabanan, that a beria is not batal? So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. If an insect falls into the soup, and you look, and you look, and you look, and you can't find it, so you're not allowed to eat the soup, because a beria is not batal, and it makes the whole taroves usur. So again, if the soup is on the fire, you may not be mechuyev to turn off the fire, and then you could rely on the half hour, or whatever. If the thing starts to break up, so then you may be okay after a half hour. But over the years, Poskim discussed various kulas that may be applicable to this whole discussion. So to start, the Rush and the Ran both quote. Let's see, everyone's still in the Ran. So I was planning on quoting from the Rush, but it's in the Ran as well. The Heter of, yeah, it's right here, on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So there's a heter based on Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi mentions this number of 960. And the Yerushalmi says, and there was a certain incident with an achbar, and it was batal. Okay? So there are mefarshim who say that when we say a beria is not batal, that means it's not batal b'shishim, it's not batal in 100, it's not batal in 200. But in 960, so there is bittul of a beria. And even though it says chaticha rulis kavet afilo be'elef lo batil, so either you could read it the way the way it's quoted in the Rush is that yeah, that's a chaticha rulis kavet. The way it's quoted here is that it didn't really mean elef. But either way, that's the Yesh Meforshim, okay, that a beria is batil in 960. Generally, these tolaim will be one in 960. They're very small compared to whatever piece of food you have. It's generally going to be one in 960. So that's one kula. We don't follow that lahalacha, right? The Rush rejects it because he says that Akbarta is the name of a place. It wasn't talking about an insect. And the Ran says that that it can't be, and that. And it wasn't because they weren't even talking about beria. They got the meaning of the Ran says that they got the mouse out. The mouse fell in. They got it out, and then the shaila was whether it was batal. So meaning it wasn't a question of nikar eser. It wasn't a question of beria either. It was a question of whether the plata from the achbar was batal in the mixture. But nobody ever entertained that the achbar itself would be batal in 960. Again, it's hard to imagine what the case was even in the first place. Like, how can a mouse fall into something and you can't find it? And I guess if it's 960 times the mass, it's got to be a big pot. But, you know, I understand losing a fly in a pot of soup. I just can't, you know, there is this Yesh Mefarshim, but I don't know how do you lose a mouse? And, Right, but either the mouse either the mouse broke up into a lot of pieces, so then you can't find it. But if the mouse is whole and it's in there, you know, mice are not small. You should be able to put it through a strainer or something. You should be able to find it. I don't know. Cash out of mice. But,
like the big pots of storage, they have like a big...
Right, but I'm saying if we're saying it's Midin Beria, so how is it not Nikar Iser? If it's whole, it's whole. Either you're going to have to say that your standard of whole is not what some of these poskim say, that if an eyeball pops out, you know, it's got to be that it's totally nisrasik. Although the Ran says that even if you lose an aver, it's considered nisrasik enough. And that could be part of the reason. You know, most of the Rishonim don't learn that we're talking about an achbar being batal in 960. So it's not such a problem. Just for these Yesh Meforshim, you have to just come up with an answer for that. Rav Shlomo Zalman has another kula in Mincha Shlomo Tinyana. This was a letter written to Rav Shimon Schwab, who was the dayan here in Washington Heights. So he wrote a letter to Rav Shlomo Zalman about what to do in camps or catering halls when you have to, you know, how are you going to check the lettuce of 1,000, 2,000 people? It's impossible. So they tried to devise different ways to get, you know, to ensure that the infestation level was such. So one of the suggestions was to cook all the lettuce and then hope that, you know, all the bugs break up when you cook the lettuce, and then you don't have a problem of beria. This is after you wash it, meaning you wash it, you get out as many as you can, but even after you wash it, you don't know for sure that there are no more bugs in there. There are probably still a significant number of bugs. So instead of having to check it, is it mutter to just cook them all and assume that you can get rid of them? So Rav Shlomo Zalman has a long shoe about this. And he mentions a few svaras. One of the svaras that he says is, and I didn't want to get into this so much, but there is that discussion about what happens if they're not that nicker lion, right? We know that microscopic organisms are not a problem. Right, but it's not a halacha l'moshe misina. It's sort of, you know, all the achronim say that lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis. So there's no real gedder. There's no definition in terms of where you draw the line. So you could say, yeah, if it's totally microscopic, it's not a problem. But what we've found lately is that a lot of these things they're not microscopic when they're alive. When they're dead, you couldn't tell them apart from a little speck of dirt. So do you have to see them actually moving around? And let's say what happens when they're dead? So does that make a difference? So Rav Shlomo Zalman has a chiddush that let's say you could see them, but you have to use some sort of trick to see them. So you have to take it out to the sun or use a light box. So he thinks that if you could actually recognize it within the mixture, you know, then it's Nikra Isser, that's a Shaila of a Daraisa. But if it's just a Shaila of a Beria, and they're that small, so it's sort of a Tzir Flahakel, meaning since it's only Drabanan, so you could rely on the fact that maybe they don't have a din of Taloim in the first place because they're small enough. That's one Kula that he brings up. And then after he comes up, that was one of the Kulas, after he comes up with his main reason to be Makel, he throws in, you know, the whole list of kulas that have been going, you know, that have been handed down from generation to generation. The Aruch HaShulchan, I only put on the Maror Makomos his introduction to this whole thing. So he writes in, yeah.
I just want to somehow make sense by lettuce. By lettuce, it's a question of the rice, because you could check every one.
No, basically he told them to wash them all out. Oh, meaning you could check them all and check if they're there?
It's not severe problem, so if it's a bad problem, it's
the right side. No, so I guess he was under the assumption that if you have 1,000 people, so you can't, you know, maybe he was following the placey, what are you going to check every single piece of lettuce? It's impossible. Now you can say, no, it's not impossible. So that seems to get into that place he versus the prima gadda. I don't know, the place he might say it's a hefs and merubah because you're going to have a guy full time, you know, in your camp to be the lettuce checker now. You know, that's a whole salary. And that's what a lot of mashgichim in restaurants, they spend like half their day checking for vegetables. If you want to know what you're paying for. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, and you know, he does this a lot throughout his work, that, you know, I know that bugs are usher, but it can't be, you know, kimat she'iyev sherli himalit mizeh, bevadeh has reason mekdaktikim b'chol efshar, but adayin kulei hai v'ulai kavachomer hamon beis Yisrael she'ina mekdaktikim ochel mekol abba yadam, and chalila lomar she'klal Yisrael yikashlu b'isr gadol kazeh. So I'm going to go and tell you all the different kulas that people may rely on. So he starts with the Yesh Meforshim, in the Rosh and the Ran, that Abir is Batal in 960. So that's one Snif L'Hakel, even though we don't paskin like that, but that's one thing. Then he writes, right, and he deals with the Nikra Isser question. Then he has another kula. Of Dvarim HaMa'usim, right, that if you have things, this is a Shailen Kuf Dalet. So if you have, let's say, going back to the mouse case, so the mouse is, it's a machlokes between the Machaber and the Shach. What happens if a mouse falls into a mixture? So do you say that the mouse, by definition, is Nosin Tam Lefgam? Who would want to eat a mouse? Right, it's a mouse, so who would want that in their mixture? So it's automatically batel. Do you say no? That the mouse, the idea of having a mouse in your, you know, in your soup may disgust you, but the mouse probably tastes just as good as chicken. You know, so yeah, it's not appetizing to know that there's mouse, that there's mouse plate that's in your mixture, but it's not nosing tam lefgam. It doesn't necessarily, if it tastes bad, it tastes bad. But if it tastes good, just you don't like the thought of the fact that there is mouse tam in your soup, so that's not enough to say that it's nosin tam lefgam. So that's a machlokes between the Mechaber and the Shach. So the Pashto says you can't apply that to Tolaim. Tolaim are by definition, even if you're going to assume that Dvar HaMa'usim are automatically nosin tam lefgam, but the Torah assers Tolaim. So when the Torah says you can't eat Tolaim, so the Pashto says that even though they're mos, you're still not allowed to eat them. But nevertheless, I think there's an Isser v'Heter who says that b'feirush. When I learned Siman Kuf Dalet the first time, I believe there's an Isser v'Heter who sort of says that directly. But whatever, the Aruch HaShulchan makes the argument that maybe in a Taroves you could say that they're Dvar HaMa'usim, and so even if they're technically not Batal, but they should be Batal because they're Nosin Tam Lefgam. Then, among the other kulas that are out there, you have a comment of the Plesi, who says the following. Now, this requires a little bit of knowledge in terms of the Isser Talaim. Talaim are only Usser if they're Sheretz HaShoretz Ala Aretz, right? So if you have what was thought to be spontaneous generation, so you have an insect that grows out of a fruit or out of a piece of meat, so that's not Sheretz HaShoretz Ala Aretz. It's not usser until it's piresh, until it starts leaving its environment and going somewhere else. Now, we're not going to get into how to apply this now that we know that there's no spontaneous generation, but the halacha is still, I could talk to you about this some other time, but the halacha is still the halacha that the insects are not usser until they leave their original home and move to somewhere else. So the Plesi has a fascinating idea that if you have, let's say, any one of these Tolaim, right? So it starts out, let's say, being mutter. The only problem is that if it's piresh, if it goes even from one piece of lettuce to another piece of lettuce, then it's a sheretz ha'shoretz ha'aretz. So the place he suggests that that's not a beria, because beria is only usser if it's usser mitchilas briyaso. But these bugs are mutter when they're in their original location, and it's only after they're piresh, right? Only after they're shoretz ha'aretz are they usser, so you don't apply the din of beria. You have the same thing with the water. You could apply this same svara. The Gemara says that any bug that grows in the water is also not considered, depending on what kind of water, Mayim Sheva Boros or Mayim Sheva Kalim, but it's not usher until it's Piresh. And we're Choshesh, that as soon as like it gets into the sink, it's Piresh. But according to the place, it wouldn't be considered a beria because it originally started out as mutter, like the Tzipor Tahora that the Ran talks about, and only after does it become a problem. The Shivas Tzion has a tshuva. I think.
What? Why is that not like a really good argument?
What's the svara argue? I mean, well, the place himself says Chas v'Shalom Lahakel, but he suggests this within Shitas Rashi. Probably because we do consider these things inherently aser, just, you know, everything has meaning the Gid Hanasha also was at some point when it was an embryo, it was not a Gid Hanasha yet, so when do you call it Tchilas Briyoso? So we probably call it Tchilas Briyoso from the time when it's Shoris Al Aret, as opposed to, especially if you consider them actually growing out of the lettuce, so they're, you know, so so its birth is when it's Pirish. So the place, again, the place he says that he doesn't want to, you know, this will do away with the whole din of beria, but he says that maybe this is a justification if you see somebody eating something that wasn't checked properly, so you can be done them l'kapskos that they're relying on this svar. He says kasafti zos ketris lifnei aparona savachas v'shom lismo chazel ahakel kol davar. That's a typo. Mikafi amar b'shulchan aruch v'poskim. And then the Shivas Tzion. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes this. I'm not sure how else I found this, but the Shiva Tzion has this idea that, or maybe it's in the Pesach Tshuva. Is the Pesach Tshuva quote this? I don't know. So he says the following, and we spoke about this in Contemporary Halacha. There is a concept of Davar Sheino Miskaven, that if you do something and you have no intent to do it, so Davar Sheino Miskaven is mutter not only on Shabbos, but it's mutter b'chol Torah Kula. The exception is Psik Reisha, that if it's inevitable for it to happen, so then you don't say Davar Sheino Miskaven is mutter. So there's a whole Shaila, the Gemara, the Mishnah in Kelayim says that Mochrik Sus are Mochrin Kedarkan. And if you have people who are selling clothes that have shatnas on it, so they can sort of model the clothing, and it's not a problem. So if it's hot, they can't put on, let's say, a shatnez hat to keep out the heat. And when it's raining, they can't put on a shatnez raincoat. But if they get no hanas levisha from wearing this coat, so that's, the Gemara says, and the Gemara ties us in to the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about davar sheino miskaven. That's called the davar sheino miskaven. Okay, so the Shivas Tzion says, you see that in Kol HaTorah Kula, aside from Shabbos, that davar sheino miskaven is mutter, even if it's inevitable, right? If you wear a shatnez coat, it's not like, well, I'm not mechaven, but it's a psik reisha, right? It's inevitable that when you wear the shatnez coat, that you're going to be wearing shatnez, even if that wasn't your intent. So he's mechalik between Shabbos and other areas of halacha. That you don't apply the psik reisha rule to other areas of halacha. If Rabbi Avram ben Arambam has a tshuva about this Mochrik Sus, where he says that it's not because you don't hold the Psik Reisha in Shari Surim, it's that Mochrik Sus is an exception to the rule, Davar Sheino Miskaven, because the only Isser of Shatnez is when you have Kavana Slavisha. If you don't have Kavana to wear it, so that's not called Levisha. That's why Mochrik Sus are Mochrik Kedarka. But leaving that Rabbi Avram ben Arambam out, so he, based on this, says that when you eat your lettuce, you have no intent to eat the bugs. That's just an inevitable consequence of eating lettuce when you don't check for the bugs. So that's his suggestion. And again, he has a little pun at the end. Im kol ze anochi tolas b'lo ish, eni kedai lahachriya. But he suggests this as a... And then he points out that the Rashba is mefurish against what he says. But the bottom line is that that's another cooler. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, after he was Makel, he threw in these ideas as additional reasons to be Makel. Incidentally, in another tshuva that he has, he was machmir, and he says, and don't tell me the crazy place, don't tell me that, you know, the Shiva Tzion. So these, you know, take them or leave them, they're there. If you feel okay being makel without it, so you could feel better after these are there. But we don't really rely on these lahalacha. I guess we have time. I'll just talk about one thing that sort of relates to this discussion. It's more relevant when you... Are you doing shechita? Much later on. So, the Gemara on Daf Gimel on the base talks about... There's a steer in the Mishnayos, and one of the Yukimtas in the Gemara, in terms of who could shecht and who could not shecht, so, and this is the first... If you started Shulchan Aruch from the beginning, this is the first sugya. Simen Aleph in shechita. So the first sugya is... Somebody shechts, and he's gone now. Or he's not gone, but he's hanging around, and we want to know whether we're allowed to eat from the meat or not. So based on the Gemara and Daf Gimel, so that what comes out is that if he's around, you have to check, you have to basically give him a bechina and hilchos shechita, see if he knows hilchos shechita. If he knows hilchos shechita, it's kosher. If not, not. Right. Obviously, if he doesn't know hilchos shechita, you find out that he doesn't know hilchos shechita, and he shechted the animal, so all bets are off. Well, let's say he disappeared, right? So he shechted an animal, and then you can't find him now. He ran away. He's in another town. So then the din is that you're allowed to eat from the shechita. Why is that? Because we have a rule, and I'm not going to go into this. This is a whole sugya of rov mitzuyin etzel shechita mumchim heim, that most of the shochtim are mumchim. So anyone, it's not that most people, or not most of us, don't know how to shecht, including myself. I mean, I learned Hilchos Shechita, but I still couldn't shecht an animal. What it means is that anyone who will actually pick up a knife and shecht an animal, I don't even know if this would apply anymore, but at least in the time of the Gemara, most people who would pick up a knife and shecht an animal know what they're doing. Okay? So the Gra in Sifkat and Dalet, in Siman Aleph and Yoredeya, points out that this is the rule that when you have... Even though we have a din of rov mitzvah neitzel shechita mumchim heim, but if you have the ability to check for it, and it's lefaneinu, you have to check for it when? When it's a miut ha-matsui, when it's a prevalent miut, so you have to check in the first place. So even though this doesn't relate so much to the sugya about Beria, but we're talking about Talaim, so that's the issue in terms of what you have to check for, what you don't have to check for. So nobody checks their apples, let's say, for bugs, because... It's very uncommon. There are sometimes worms and apples, but it's very uncommon that you're going to have toloim in an apple, right? Where do you have to check? You have to check certainly if it's musak. If every piece has a bug in it, there's no shiloh. Then there's no rove. But even if there's a rove, and even if rove whatever, well, let's just call rove species A. Doesn't normally have toloim, but if there's a miud hamatsui and it's checkable, then you have to check. Okay, so the question is what your subset is. Meaning, what does it mean? What's the rove? 50% of what? 50% of each piece of lettuce. And when we talk about miud hamatsui, so the poskim generally, some poskim say 7.5%, but the generally accepted opinion is 10%. So 10% of what? Right, so if I said 10%, so if you look in the last three sources here, so Rav Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman basically the same, say somewhat of, they say the same thing in a slightly different way. They say the following, that if you have, let's say you're serving 10,000 people at a wedding, so now you have lettuce for 10,000 people, so you have to know that if you did 10 of those weddings, that you've checked enough to make sure that there isn't a bug at the whole affair, right? So it depends how much you have. If you're serving one person, so then you only have to know that every 10 times the person eats is not going to be a bug. But if you have 10,000 people eating there, so you have to know that the chance of that your system is such that a bug will show up at that wedding only 1 in 10 times. Otherwise, you have to check the entire stock. That's Rav Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shechter says that the pashtus, and he'll tell you this. You know, this makes sense. That it's where do we get 10% from? That we don't want people to be nifshal in an aveira. So it's 10% of the serving size. Meaning if you have one person eating or 10 people eating, you have to make sure that that person has less than a 10% chance personally of eating a bug. But if there's 10,000 people there, so we might be okay with 100 people or even 1,000 people there having a bug in their lettuce. It's 10% of each serving size. And that's what when we talk about, let's say, checking for trephus. So we don't check every one of the trephus. We only check the lungs because that's amir hamatzei, that's shechiyah. Which means that if you eat, if you eat meat, eventually you're going to eat a trepha. Or even, if you have a big wedding, there may be people there who are eating trephas, but that's the halacha. We follow rov, and that's, and if it's not a amir hamatzei, so you don't have to look for it. Yeah.
I didn't really catch the difference between
Rabbi Yashim and Rosh Hashanah, they basically, you have to check whatever you have in your inventory. Meaning, if there's less than a 10% chance of your inventory being totally insect-free, you don't have to check at all. If it's more than a 10% chance, then you have to check. For Rosh Hashanah, it's 10% of a serving size. Meaning, if one serving has less than 10% chance, then you don't have to check.
Just one serving, right?
So,
one serving,
if you have a bag of lettuce that has, let's say, it's statistically speaking. Again, this is all statistics. This is not that we know that there's a bug there. The statistics tell you that you have a bag, let's say, a crate of lettuce, and there's going to be one bug statistically in there. You don't have to check for it if 20 people are eating that. Whereas Rosh Shlomo Zalman or Rav Liasher will say, of course you have to check, because you have to check. If there's a 10% chance that your whole stock has a bug in it, one bug. So that's why, there was a whole big to-do. It was 2 years ago. There was a whole tumult about a lot of these hashgacha organizations giving hashgachas to things that were supposed. Nobody checks, right? There's nobody checking any of this stuff. They may check like a few samples to make sure that they're on target in terms of their cleaning process. So, if you follow Rav Shlomo Zalman or Rav Liashiv, it's pretty much impossible to give a hashkacha on anything because you'd have to pretty much guarantee that there's not a bug in the whole stock in the entire run in order to give a hashkacha. And not only one run, 10 runs. You have to make sure that every 10 runs there's not a bug in the whole thing. It's got to be a hermetically sealed process. Whereas if you're going with the serving size, then you can give a hashkacha on a bag of lettuce, as long as, if there's three servings, that there's less than, 30% chance that there's a bug in it. Is that, whatever. I don't have time to do math while I'm told. Yeah?
I understand the procedure that you're saying, 10%, even if you check things, you can't, unless you do this analysis, you take multiple samples and then analyze it inside of 10%, it's not going to bind you whether it's 10%. If I check the whole sample, I can't tell you.
No, they check, that's how they do it. They check the sample at the beginning, see what, after, let's say, they clean it. So how many bugs are in a sample? And then they extrapolate based on a few different times they check. I don't know if they check a million times.
We're evaluating the percentage of that.
Yeah, I'm
checking.
Right, exactly. It's a statistic, right? Where do they get the statistics from? I'm not sure how scientific they are. With the whole thing with the bugs in the water, It was scientific for a while, but it cost a lot of money to pay a guy to full-time sit there and take samples, and there are better things to spend your money on. So I'm not sure how scientific these sample things are, but people pretty much know, whatever. If you keep looking at your lettuce, you go home after you buy the non-hashgacha lettuce, and every single time, every 45 times you'll find one bug, so then you don't have to check anymore, if that's the case. If it's not the case, it's not the case. Sometimes you don't know what you're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, you shouldn't be the one recording the analysis. But if you know what you're looking for and you keep checking and you don't find anything, so at some point, unless there are process changes, it should be okay. But I'm not saying that that's true. I'm not saying that the lettuce is totally clean, but if that were to be the case, then yeah, you wouldn't have to check. Yeah.
Ignoring the fact that blood spots today in eggs aren't real blood spots, If somebody checked 45 dozen eggs and found one blood spot in 45 dozen eggs, does that mean he doesn't have to check eggs anymore?
I mean, it would be like that with a lot of things, like shotness also. You know, we all check for shotness. Ramosha writes that it's really just a minhug, as opposed to, meaning there are certain companies where you don't even have to go to the shotness place. They'll tell you that it's shotness, right, without even checking it, because they're always shotness in those suits. But then there are other companies that haven't had shotness, you know, in a million suits that they produce. They never brought linen into their company. They've never had linen in their factory. So how would shotness be in there? So Rav Moshe writes, we have a minhag to check, even though it's not a mi'ad hamatzui. But yeah, technically, you could, you know, the same thing, people will argue, yeah, we have a minhag to check for blood spots and eggs. Now you say, now, the other tanya is a better tanya, that they already checked for the blood spots and the eggs. And even if there are blood spots are not the same as the blood spots of old, because eggs aren't fertilized. Although now that organic's coming back into style, you know, there's going to be less checking, and there may be some, I don't know, I'm not sure if they're fertilized eggs, but, you know, they're brown, they're not as easy to check from light. Rabbi Broid has an article about checking for blood spots and eggs. You should read it if you're interested. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any questions? Yeah.
The case of the child in the camp about whether we can have lettuce. Assuming that you already think it's not a problem either, because it's all fine, but the idea that we think, let's be like doing something, you do anyway, like jams, that makes sense. You're going to purify it anyway. So here, you were going to cook lettuce.
Yeah, I mean, that was more of meaning after they checked, after they washed it and got it out, and it may already be, you know, borderline threshold. It was, right, it was an extra thing. Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't do it just, if you did it bekavanas, that would be that's machlokas, the Rashba and the Ran. If you did it bekavanas, to be mevatel it. But kavanas levatel, the way the Ran describes it is, right, that you want it in the mixture, meaning you want to eat them, not that you want to take care of the Yisr. But I don't know if we would go that far if it's kavanos levatel in the active sense.
The same thing is true of the strawberries. They want to cook them. Something like a cake or something.
If they get baked, I don't think that they
get baked, it doesn't break apart.
I'm not sure. I've never.